This is Chris Bleck on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Thanks for listening to the Bleck and Abdallah podcast. It's presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
This is Bleck and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
Don't you agree?
You can't say the word crumb bum right before we come on the air and expect me not to laugh through the entire segment.
Bleck and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000.
Is it like, I got crumbs somewhere?
I think it's from The Simpsons.
What is a crumb bum?
From ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Bleck and Abdallah with you. And so The Last Dance comes up.
An objectionable or foolish person. Crumb bum. I learned something today.
Yeah. Don't you agree?
Yeah.
Okay. So there you go. The Last Dance tonight at 8 o'clock on ESPN television. All the coverage here on ESPN 1000 presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com.
I'm getting a tall boy of Coors Light for tonight.
Coors
Light.
One
of those big ones.
Take time
to
chill.
Do they make Coors Light 40s?
I'm sure we could find that out at 7-Eleven later when we leave here.
I'm going to get one.
I will be drinking Coors Light tonight, yeah. Before, during, and probably after the broadcast.
You got to wake up early, though, so.
That's cool. So over the course of the next month, as we watch and consume The Last Dance, Abdallah, I think that we can kind of pinpoint, if we go to the future and kind of guess what some of the hot takes are going to be over the course of the next month, based on the footage and the consumption of the documentary, The Last Dance. So I'm going to give you four takes that I think we will hear over the course of the next month that will kind of be in the discourse, in the social conversation.
Right.
I want you to tell me how likely it will be that this topic or this take will come up because of the documentary we are going to watch tonight and over the course of the next four
weeks.
I'm
going to grade them not likely, likely. Very likely.
Okay, so the first hot take I think we will hear based on these documentaries are...
Oh, that takes me back.
Okay. The take is this. We will hear over the course of the next month at some point that the Jordan era of basketball, the 90s era of basketball, and what we watched with the Jordan era was the best sports has ever been. We are going to hear that take. Someone will make the argument that sports was never better than what we saw during the Jordan era.
Basketball or sports?
Sports.
Sport?
Someone will say that the sports consumption was never greater, never better than what we saw during the Jordan era. Sports was never better than that era. Someone's going to say it. That's going to be a take.
I will say very likely, but that is only because of the age group that you and I are in, the age group that Cap, Carmen, Yurko, Waddle, Sylvie, that age group, right?
Yeah.
You know, like Fred who's coming in with Xander at 10 o'clock here. This isn't a shot at anybody, but we believe nostalgia is always the best. The music I listened to when I was growing up is better than the new music, right? The sports that I watched when I was growing up is better than sports now. Anything. Movies were better. The Pepsi, Coke tasted better. Coors Light.
Right.
Still great. Now better.
Right.
So my point is that, yes, because of nostalgia and how we always think that everything was better when we were growing up, then yes, you were going to get that.
Okay. So that, number one, someone is going to say, and the take is going to be built off of the concept that the Jordan era was the best that sports ever was.
Very likely.
That's it. Okay, number two. It's not exactly that take, but it is on the same path. Someone is going to give you the take over the course of the next month that life was never better than back then. That take is going to happen. along the lines of Coke tasting better, the mid-90s, the way we consumed the Jordan era, the way the economy was. You're going to hear the take that, Clinton, the economy, all this stuff, the booming United States of America. Michael Jordan was the leader of this. TV was better. Everything was better. Life was better back then. That's going to be the hot take you're going to hear over the course of the next month.
Less likely. Less likely because think about it. Like, you can, like, I got, the internet's not the same right now. I got four Twitter feeds up right now.
But those people will argue that simpler time was better.
No, because we talked about it when we were doing the Bulls backstory, which we do every show we're on throughout the run of The Last Dance. We were talking about Jordan switching hands and how one of the two moments during the Bulls era that I wish I had Twitter for was Jordan switching hands and Scottie Pippen dunking over Patrick Ewing. Like, I wish Twitter was around for that, for all the memes and all that kind of stuff. Like, that stuff to me is fun. I like that stuff. I think that technology, everything is better than it was back in the day. Like, listen, were you creeping on AOL Instant Messenger? Sure. But what? Now you can slide into DMs. It's the same thing, only better.
So you're saying life is not better back in the day when you had AOL?
Welcome.
No, I think it's better now.
Okay, think we will hear someone say that take?
Less likely.
You think that's less likely? Okay,
less likely.
So Black and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. Takes that you will hear, hot takes you will hear over the course of the next month because people are consuming The Last Dance. Number three. It's getting hot in here. So hot. If Michael Jordan didn't play baseball, the Bulls would have won 8 championships in a row.
Very likely. The most likely. That's the most likely thing, because that's already started. That's already started, and the detractors have already come in. And then you know what else you're going to hear? I don't know if this is take your next take.
No, go ahead.
But the other one will also be like from anybody that didn't grow up in Chicago or a Bulls fan. When we get to the last few episodes of The Last Dance, the push off. Or the shot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about when you either have the push off or the shot. They're the same highlight. It's the same highlight.
Right. But two different perspectives.
You either believe it's the shot or you believe it's the highlight. So, or the push off, I mean. So, of that highlight. So, to me, yes, they're going to say the Bulls minimum 8-peat, possible 9-peat if they didn't get broken up. If this group had stayed together for the kids. Minimum 9-peat. Minimum.
and see, like, that's where this is a hot take I know we are going to hear.
Oh, 100%.
Because when you look at it, right, Houston wins the title in 94 and 95. The Houston Rockets were really good. And so, like, to discredit the Houston Rockets, the one thing I would point to is, yeah, the Bulls had Michael Jordan, but you can make an argument that Hakeem Olajuwon was, in that era, the second best player in the NBA. Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying? So, like, even though the Bulls didn't face him in a finals, he would have been the best player the Bulls would have faced in a finals. So you can make the argument that, the Bulls would have probably won. They would have figured it out. Then we go back to what we've seen from the Warriors in the last 5 years. The fact that their run has taken such a toll on Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Steve Kerr, and everyone with that organization that's been there for the last 5 to 6 years, you can make the argument a part of why the Bulls were so great was they got that two-year gap, that gap year, to kind of refresh. And I get it. Pippen was there, and Tony Kukoc was there during the 94-95 seasons, but he wasn't there in the first three-peat. Like, a lot of pieces changed. Some stayed the same. The coach, Pippen, and a couple others stayed the same, but you really had a full refresh when it comes to the expectations from the team, because really the Bulls were not expected to win titles in 94 and 95. They weren't the best team in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
So it was a reset. And so you're going to get the take from people that if the Bulls would have stayed together, they would have won 8 in a row. Like, it's an automatic thing.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, that would have been cool. You could say it could be likely.
Fatigue, man.
I don't know what that percentage would be. Like, fatigue. How likely would that have been? Would it be a 60% proposition? Well, would it be 80, 90? Some people talk about it like it's a 98% chance the Bulls, if they would have stayed together through 94 and 95, would have collected 8 titles in a row. I don't think the percentile is that high. I think it's something more of like 50-50.
How likely is it that they add? Well, I'm not even talking about those 2 years.
Well, no, because once you get to the Jazz in 97-98, that's where you see, like, okay, in 98, they were so tired and beaten up against the Pacers in the Eastern Conference Finals in that Game 7, and they found a way to get to the Finals. There's no way they're getting to that point if they're playing through the Finals in 94-95. So you may beat the Rockets, but are you beating the Jazz in 97 and 98?
Exactly. And also, how much roster turnover do you have if you keep everything together? Like, do they get Rodman for the next three-peat? Do they, like, if you are trying to stay together and you're trying to make this, you know, everybody sticks together, we're going to keep winning until we don't win and we break it apart. How much roster turnover are you going to have? You might not have as much. You know, and that leads to more fatigue, and that leads to everything. So, yeah, you might have beaten the Rockets twice, like you said, but ultimately, do you get past five? Do you get more than six? Those last two against the Jazz. I don't know if you do because of the roster turnover. They basically flipped most of the roster in the second three-peat, and then these guys were so tired at the end of the first three-peat. Jordan was exhausted at the end of the first three-peat. That he went and played baseball and everything, but dude needed a reset too, you know?
Well, and look at the money they spent in 1994-95. You know, Jordan only collected $3.8 million from the Bulls.
Jeez.
Right? So, like, well, but they could spend elsewhere because they didn't have Jordan on the books, which in 96, 97, 98, you then add the $30 million contracts that he then got. So, like, the whole thing is completely different if that team stays together for that amount of time.
So, and that is very likely, extremely likely, the most likely. It's already happening. I'm seeing it right now.
Well, and that's why I think the hot take you will hear over the course of the next month is if Michael didn't play baseball, the Bulls would have won 8 championships in a row. So we're counting down the 4 hot takes you're going to hear over the course of the next month. This is number 4. Here's the take. You're going to hear it from somebody. The Jordan Bulls were bigger than the Beatles. The Michael Jordan Bulls of the 90s, they were bigger in pop culture than the rock band, the Beatles. That's the take. That's what you're going to hear. You're going to hear that over the course of the next month. Somebody is going to roll that take out.
I've already heard it.
Well, I know you've already heard it.
I've already heard
it. You know that's going to come up again.
They're not going to say that they're bigger than the Beatles.
Somebody is going to say that.
Bigger than the Beatles.
I've already heard
it was like traveling with the Beatles. Those words have already been spoken. It was like traveling with the Beatles. Yes. But it's the Beatles, man. Nobody's bigger than the Beatles. It's the Beatles.
I mean, if you look at TV ratings and you look at the course of history, nobody popped on a TV rating for NBA Finals basketball like Jordan did. Like, the high mark for Bulls Finals games in 1998, no one's ever come close to that.
Okay.
LeBron and the Warriors got, like, almost there, but they didn't pop the way Jordan did. So, like, Jordan in the 98 Finals, was that the Beatles going on the Ed Sullivan Show?
I don't know what the rating was when the Beatles went.
Yeah, but like, every old-timer tells you that they all watched it. Every person on the planet saw that. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Someone's going to have that take. That take's going to be out there.
Medium likely. Likely.
Black and Abdallah here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app. All our coverage of the Last Dance and Last Dance Mondays here on ESPN 1000 is presented by Coors Light. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill. We talk about the NFL draft with Connor Rogers next.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah.
ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
This is Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000.
The NFL draft is on Thursday night. The Chicago Bears in the second round, Abdallah. Will a quarterback be a selection? And most people, I think they look at this Bears team, and they say, okay, we need a whole bunch of things. We need offensive line help. We need a tight end. We need a second wide receiver. I would like another cornerback. I would like some more help on the defensive line. I get it. We have a stacked defensive line, but you see teams that are successful for a long period of time in the NFL. Usually they are adding more to the line on the defensive side and the offensive side. So I would always look to add on the defensive line. And also the Bears need a safety, right? I just listed off a whole slew of things that Ryan Pace needs to shop for. He has limited assets. In the second round, he has the 43rd pick overall and the 50th pick overall in the second round as we head into the draft on Thursday night. On that list that I just gave you, at no point did I say quarterback, but the Bears need a quarterback for the future. Is it possible with all of those options that they need for this next season that he uses one of these picks, 43 or 50, on a quarterback?
No, I don't think so, because I think that we live in a world now where Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy, their jobs are on the line, right? So to me, they have their quarterback room set. You know, maybe they take one really late. Maybe they get they sign an undrafted free agent. Maybe they bring in someone just for the room, right? But ultimately, you have Nick Foles and you have Mitch Trubisky, and that's it. And you're not going to bring in a guy like Jalen Hurts. You're not going to waste a pick in the second round. I'm not saying waste, in their mind, waste a pick in the second round, because you need impact players now. You need to win now. If they don't make the playoffs, they're out. That's how I feel, at least. They should be. They haven't proven anything. You made it to the playoffs one year and you lost. You haven't. Your quarterback that you drafted hasn't developed, and you've had to bring in a high-priced free agent to make up for that fact. You traded for him. You traded a fourth-round pick for Nick Foles. You've admitted defeat. You've admitted that Mitch Trubisky isn't the guy, that you don't think he's going to be the guy. Half of your signees and draftees are not on the team anymore. They just released Trey Burton. Then you gave Jimmy Graham $9 million earlier this offseason. So to me, you're going to take a tight end. You're going to take somebody. You're going to take a wide receiver. You're going to take a safety. You're going to take a corner. You're going to take high-impact players with those picks, and you're not going to take a quarterback who's going to sit on the bench for a year and eventually be the guy.
If this was our draft room, if Bleck and Abdallah were drafting for a team, I would be annoyed. This to me is the least ideal situation to building a team.
Of course it is, but they're drafting for now.
Right, and drafting for this year, and this year only, because we are afraid of losing our jobs, to me is the worst way of building a team for the future. So I'm annoyed long term, because the idea should always be you should be implementing a concept where you are drafting players to help you for the future and now. Like, you should be drafting starters. Here's the thing, Ryan Pace. If you don't get two starters with 43 and 50, you're out anyway. Right, like the fact that you have no third round picks, you have no first round pick, then you get to the fifth round, you got some picks, right? Mm-hmm. Six and sevens, those aren't starters. Look how teams are built. You have to get two starters from 43 and 50. I get it. But then you also don't have a quarterback for the future. So, like, what's more beneficial to the long term success of the Chicago Bears? Getting a starter at tight end, or maybe at safety, two positions that you can figure out later on, or if you can land said quarterback, who is a quarterback that fell to the second round because draft experts have kind of pinned him as a guy who can't get it done, even though he's had success at the college level, right? Like, and that's where we get this whole conversation about Jalen Hurts, Mel Kiper Jr. this week, talking about Hurts' stock on the rise.
I think when you look at where he could go, I think Pittsburgh would be an ideal spot to be the heir apparent to Big Ben. You could work him into packages like Lamar Jackson did behind Joe Flacco his rookie year. I bring up Taysom Hill, what he's meant to New Orleans. He's going to be possibly the heir apparent to Drew Brees. Teddy Bridgewater, they let go. He's in Carolina now. So that's how highly regarded Taysom Hill is in Sean Payton's mind. So I think you look at a guy like Jalen Hurts, could he go first? I heard one team said maybe late first. New England, obviously, when you think about the Patriots, could have some interest. I heard that. Didn't want to put him at 23. I think that's way too high. Question with him, Kev, is will he see the field well enough as a passer? Everybody puts up numbers for Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma. You saw progress as a passer, but enough progress to warrant being a first-round pick? I don't think so. Second-round pick's a little rich for me, but that's where I hear he's going to go. In fact, I hear he's not getting out of round two, and that would be Pittsburgh's first pick overall. They have no one. They pick in the second. I am taking Jalen Hurts.
Okay, and Pittsburgh's selection is at 49, which means if the Steelers took Jalen Hurts with their first pick in the second round at 49, mm-hmm. that would mean the Bears passed him at 43. Mm-hmm. Okay, what do the Steelers and the Saints have in common? Over the course of time.
Old quarterbacks.
Over the course of time in the NFL, what do they have in common? Starting quarterbacks, mm-hmm. and what else? Stability in the front office,
yep.
the coaches,
yep.
stability, right? They also win, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Steelers and the Saints, two teams that win. And if Mel Kiper Jr. is hearing that those are the two teams that like Jalen Hurts, shouldn't the Bears at 43 kind of look at it and say?
What's the other team you mentioned? The Patriots.
Right. Yeah, the Patriots have been mentioned as well as options who have two first-round picks.
Let me just give you some numbers here, Chris. QBR when pressured, third out of the quarterbacks in the draft. Completion percentage at 20-plus yards downfield, fourth amongst quarterbacks in the draft. QBR inside the pocket, second. QBR outside the pocket, second. Completion percentage on an out route, which is 11 to 20 yards, which if you look at this article that was on ESPN sizing up the quarterback mm-hmm. class and what they do best and what they do worst, why do you look at the out route? Why should we care about the out route? Well, consider a 15-yard out route, which doesn't sound intimidating until you figure out how far that throw actually is. A QB in the middle of the field is about 80 feet from the sideline, making a 15-yard out. Throw actually travels over 30 yards into what can be a very tight window. Rainbow launch angles won't work. He's first in that. First in the out route that's 11 to 20 yards in what is a very telling metric. You know who's right after him? Tua Tagovailoa, Joe Burrow, and Jake Fromm, yep. and then Justin Herbert. I get it. You put up gaudy numbers at Oklahoma, but percentages matter. This kind of completion percentage on throws 20-plus yards downfield, fourth best. Like, he should be. I get it. He's not Joe Burrow. He's not Tua Tagovailoa. You want the stability of Justin Herbert because he played for 4 years? Fine. Go ahead. Take a game manager. But if you want a guy who teams with, by all accounts, with winning mentality, with stability, like you mentioned, the front office are looking at, with the Saints, with the Steelers, he mentioned the Patriots, that's Jalen Hurts. That's a guy who's going
to
be there.
On Friday night, we got a chance to talk with YouTuber Brett Coleman. His page is fantastic, breaking down all the players in the NFL draft. This is his take on Jalen Hurts heading into the draft.
I think it's because they remember his freshman and most of his sophomore year at Alabama when he wasn't accurate. Like, that is a fair statement to say that early in his college career, he was not an accurate quarterback. But things change. You know, if you spend 4 years in college football and you go to the quarterback whisperer that is Lincoln Riley, who has developed three straight transfer quarterbacks to be viable first-round talents, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, and Jalen Hurts, you know, for some reason, people don't understand that quarterbacks can get better between the ages of 18 and 22. Like, that is not a new thing. And Jalen Hurts just flat out got better. You look at statistically, you mentioned that thread that I posted, and he's a more accurate quarterback than Justin Herbert and Jordan Love, and it's not really particularly close. When you look at that OU offense, people think it's just quick game and screens. That is not accurate. They threw only 40 screens all year long. That's about 11% screen rate, which is probably about NFL average. You look at Justin Herbert, he was throwing screens 23% of the time, which no starting NFL quarterback has ever done that. In terms of passes 10-plus yards past the line of scrimmage, meaning working the intermediate and deep passing game, Hurts was throwing it down the field 45% of the time. That was better than any other top college prospect in this class, even Burrow and even Tua. And he was throwing, in terms of on-target accuracy on those downfield throws, 75% accuracy, which was third best in college football. So, you know, we're talking about a kid that is an incredible leader that has shown the ability to get better every single year in college, that has great mobility. He's tough as nails. There's zero health problems with him. And he's just an accurate passer that is nowhere near the kind of player he was as a freshman. I don't understand why he's not being talked about as a first-round talent, because he almost has like a Deshaun Watson-type quality to me, where it's third and seven, you need a play to be made, he's going to make it. Like, I love everything about Hurts. If Chicago picks him up at pick 43 or whatever you guys are at the top of the second,
right,
that's a home run to me.
So that's Brett Coleman from Friday night. We then started to talk about how teams passed on Lamar Jackson in the first round, and then he went to the Ravens. And does that compare to Jalen Hurts in this year's draft? And then we also discussed how Abdallah and I went back to the Oklahoma-Baylor game, and, you know, really, Jalen Hurts didn't play well for three quarters, but in the fourth, he was awesome. Here's Brett Coleman on teams possibly passing on Hurts.
And, you know, you mentioned that Baylor game. I actually just watched it back the other day just because I wanted to refresh myself on what exactly happened. So he had a pick in the first half in that game, and it was off like a pump-and-go switch concept. And the thing with that pick, he was throwing it from the far hash. The receiver, before Jalen even was throwing the ball, the receiver was turning back and looking for it. So if a DB is hauling butt to get down the field because he got rubbed off the line of scrimmage, and all of a sudden he sees the wide receiver look for the ball, what do you think he's going to do? He's going to stop and look for the ball. So if the corner's looking for it before Jalen can even get it out of his hands because the receiver's looking for it way too early and not pressing his route down the field, especially coming from the far hash, yeah, it's going to be a pick. And unfortunately, Jalen threw it, but I would really more put that on the receiver pointing the defensive back right to the ball with his eyes from the start of the play. Now, there were some fumbling problems in that game, which is really the main concern that I have with Jalen, is he fumbled the ball a lot as a ball carrier. Not necessarily in the pocket, but just as a runner. I think he had three fumbles in that game. But you saw in the second half, like you mentioned, CeeDee Lamb was out. He was not playing in the second half. And so he's working with his number 2, 3, and 5 receiver, I think it was. Baylor was bringing pressure like crazy. They were down 25 points, recovering from 3 fumbles and an interception, and he still won the damn game. What more do you want?
That's Brett Coleman. You can hear the full podcast. Search Black and Abdallah on iTunes or on the ESPN Chicago app. Download it today on Apple and on Google Play. You can hear the entire interview with Brett Coleman and all of our guests previewing the NFL draft right there on the ESPN Chicago app.
Here's what I've heard a lot of, and this is from Chris on Twitter, and he's not the first one, but he just did it, so I'm gonna bring it up.
Shout out to Chris. What up, Chris?
Bring it up.
How you doing?
I'm gonna bring it up.
Chris,
he says not to discredit him because he's never played, blah 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 blah. But if Jalen Hurts had the it factor, why did he get replaced by Tua? Also, let's look at Oklahoma and Alabama QBs who get into the NFL. Overhyped. Okay, let's do that. You want to know why? Because he was replaced by a guy who almost won 2 Heismans at Alabama. Tua was statistically the best quarterback in Alabama history. And oh, last I checked, Kyler Murray went to Oklahoma. Is he overhyped?
Have you ever heard of Baker Mayfield?
I've heard of Baker Mayfield. I heard he plays quarterback.
Listen, the whole point of this is if we list off the Bears' needs, there are a ton of players and a ton of positions that the Bears need for next season. But more importantly, they need a quarterback for the future.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports. It's Black and Abdallah. Follow us on the gram at Black and Abdallah and at ESPN _ Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
The Last Dance is tonight on ESPN television at 8 o'clock. 10-part documentary series. All the conversation here on ESPN 1000 is brought to you by Coors Light. Mm. Stay inside and buy your Coors Light online. Find out how at get.coorslight.com. Coors Light, take time to chill. Black and Abdallah with you here on ESPN 1000. Also, don't forget, Last Dance Mondays tomorrow. Cap and Company, Waddle and Sylvie, Carmen and Yurko, Under the Hood. We will have you covered. Everything that you see tonight from The Last Dance, we will break it down tomorrow here on ESPN 1000. And also remember to check out the Twitch page tonight, about a half an hour before the broadcast, about 7:30. Mm-hmm. Featured Sylvie tonight will break down some stories as we walk into the coverage of The Last Dance on ESPN television. Go to our Twitch page at ESPN 1000 Chicago, all presented to you by White Claw tonight on the Twitch channel.
Yeah, so ESPN 1000 Chicago, and tomorrow around 3 o'clock with Waddle and Sylvie, the director, Jason Hare, will come on every week after the episodes airs and kind of give a behind the scenes of those episodes and what they left on the cutting room floor, all that stuff. You know, they're not done with it yet.
Yeah.
He's still editing it.
Well, they got a month.
Yeah, they're still editing the last couple episodes because of the they wanted to fast track this since everybody's, you know, at home and there's stuff to watch and, you know, they can put this up early.
So Last Dance coverage brought to you by Coors Light. White Claw is sponsoring Waddle and Sylvie's draft show on Twitch on Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m., walking you into first-round coverage of the NFL draft. So you got to check that out with Waddle and Sylvie on Thursday as well. Black and Abdallah with you here on ESPN 1000. Thank you to Tyler Aki for producing today's show. Fred Huebner and Xander coming up at 10 o'clock here on ESPN 1000. This is a tweet I want to ask you about, Abdallah. Kevin tweets us, who is bigger? Because we were talking about Michael Jordan and the Bulls, and someone's going to give us the take at some point in the next month that the Bulls are bigger than the Beatles. Mm-hmm. Is Michael Jordan more recognizable now than Paul McCartney? Around the world, who is more recognizable? Kevin tweets us that. At Chris Black, at Adam A. Abdallah.
I instantly, with anything like this, I instantly go to the person that goes that caters to more people. And regardless of what you want to believe, whether you're listening to this on the ESPN Chicago app, your Google Home, your Alexa, whatever it is, you're listening to us on the radio.
Good promos.
It doesn't matter.
Yep.
We are diehard sports fans. This is what we do. But the world, in general, are not as diehard sports fans as we are. Pop culture people are going to be bigger than sports people. The exception of that is usually Michael Jordan. And so saying that, I still think Paul McCartney is more recognizable and more popular. I mean, look at, like look, yesterday they had the telethon for the coronavirus. It was on every major network. Who was out there? Paul McCartney, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying Michael Jordan is doing it or doesn't need to, but the point is, it's Paul McCartney. I still think, any pop culture person is more recognizable when compared to a sports person. Especially Paul McCartney is like Paul McCartney, Elton John. Those guys are like the height, Mick Jagger. Those guys are the height of popularity in music. And I think that those guys are more recognizable in the street. Like if you had people walking down the street, I think you're going to get equal mobs. I think you're going to get the same amount of people mobbing Paul McCartney than you, and you're going to get the same amount of people mobbing Jordan. Now, it's going to be different people, you know? Jordans might be younger people. You're going to get different factions of people. You're going to get sneakerheads. You're going to get sports fans. You're going to get Space Jam fans. You're going to get all that kind of stuff. Paul McCartney, you're going to have a bunch of old people and Beatles fans. But the point is, like, there are more Beatles fans in the world than there are Michael Jordan fans in the world. Is that fair to say? There are more fans of the Beatles than there are of Michael Jordan.
It's tough because I think of all the famous people on the planet, those have to be two of the top 10 most famous people on the planet,
oh,
right?
For sure.
So they're in the running of the most recognizable famous people on the planet. Probably the Pope is in that category, right? I would argue that you could probably make a case that Bill Gates is in that category.
But because Paul McCartney's out in the world. He does concerts.
If you had to select one person from music to be in the top 10 of the most famous people in the world, Paul McCartney would probably be it, right?
Yeah, and my point is, like, Jordan still doesn't do a lot of stuff. We don't see a lot of Jordan. You see a lot of Paul McCartney.
Yeah,
he does concerts every year. He does full tours every year. He's out there. He's doing shows. He's doing potty. He's doing everything. He's out on TV yesterday. Jordan doesn't do a lot of stuff.
It's a good question from Kevin there, who tweeted us at Chris Black and at Adam A. Abdallah. On our podcast page on the ESPN Chicago app, not only do we have all of our interviews with draft experts leading up to the NFL draft that you can download and listen to heading into Thursday, Abdallah and I will be back on Saturday with a draft show from 2:30 to 6 right here on ESPN 1000. So we'll be breaking down the 6th and 7th round. We will be breaking down what the Bears do in the second round of the draft and all the coverage of the first round as well on Saturday afternoon.
Can't wait. It's going to be fun. I love the draft. It's one of my favorite events of the year.
Fred Huebner, Xander, coming up next right here on ESPN 1000.
You're listening to Black and Abdallah on ESPN 1000. Chicago's home for sports.